Hello, my name is Isaac Keith Martinez, and welcome to Isaac's Haunted Beard. Today, we are going to talk about the film Intolerable Cruelty. Have you seen Intolerable Cruelty? This is a comedy directed by Joel Coen, who is a part of the Coen brothers, you know, team of brothers that write movies together, and typically Joel directs them and is responsible for some classics like Fargo and Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? And No Country for Old Men, and my personal favorite Coen brothers film, Raising Arizona. They are responsible for Intolerable Cruelty. This movie stars George Clooney and Catherine Zeta-Jones. I'm guessing that if you haven't seen it, you've at least heard of it. And I'm going to do some more guessing. I am going to guess. Maybe I'm wrong. Who knows? I'm just going to guess. That's what guessing is all about, right? You could be right. You could be wrong. I'm going to guess that if you haven't seen it, it's for like no specific reason. Like, I don't think it's one of those movies that carries this reputation of like people going, oh, that looks bad, or that movie is bad, you know, like I bet you just are neutral about it, like you just didn't put that much thought into it, like, eh, whatever, it exists. But like, would you have been more interested if you had known it was a Coen brothers film? I guess if you are a Coen brothers fan. If you're not a Coen brothers fan, that doesn't carry any weight, right? So I am a Coen Brothers fan. What that means to me is what that means whenever I'm a fan of any director. I watch all their movies, no matter what, even if I don't know what they're about or who's in them. If a new film comes out by the Coen Brothers, I will give it a chance. And most of the time, I'll like it a lot, because they're, I would consider them among my favorite movie directors. And even when I feel like they kind of miss the mark for me personally, they've never made, in my opinion, a bad movie. So even like the movies that I don't like as much, I still think are good. Like, I still recognize what's good about them. So yes, I did watch this movie recently, just for fun, you know, not with the intention of doing this podcast, but it did cross my mind that it could be a fun episode, a fun movie to do an episode about for this specific reason, because I am aware it's not one of their more famous titles. And if you are one of the people who have not seen it, who I think might like it, I am going to try to get you to watch it, right? Is that what these podcasts are about, right? Trying to like get film recommendations, you know, maybe. I think that's a big part of it. So, you know, like, I guess a lot of movie directors, unless you're blessed where everything you do is a huge hit, you know, the Coen brothers' career kind of goes up and down as far as like popularity, you know. They go through like a string of hits where everything they put out is well received, and at least in the conversation among cinephiles. But you know, I also noticed that there's times in their career where they might make a string of movies that aren't as talked about or aren't as successful. And in the aughts, I would say there was a three-picture run where they made three movies in a row that weren't as celebrated. Is that a good way to put it? I mean, some people didn't like them. Maybe they're just considered not as good as their other films. Maybe I'm biased. I think they're all good movies, and this is one of them. This is a part of those three films. So here's the moment in time that this movie exists in, okay? So I would say after Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, which was a popular movie and one of my favorite Coen Brother films, that's when they made three movies in a row that I remember, at least this is how I remember it. Am I wrong? I feel like these three movies weren't as talked about and weren't as celebrated. And then, after these three films, I believe, yeah, after these three films, they made No Country for Old Men, which was a return to the Coen brothers being like a hot topic of conversation among film fans. But those three movies in a row, for the record, were The Man Who Wasn't There from 2001, and then this one, Intolerable Cruelty, from the year 2003, and then The Lady Killers from 2004. And I like all three of these films. I guess I'm not really sure which of the three of these films I like the most, but I don't really think that that's important. Maybe this one. I would say that of those three films I just mentioned, this is the one that I revisited the most. I always feel like with this movie, and I'm sure there's a lot of movies that I feel this way about, but in this case, we're talking about this movie. It's one of those movies where I always remember that I like it. And once in a while, I will just kind of randomly revisit it. And it always plays like even better than I remember it. Like, wow, this is so good. I wonder why people don't like it as much or don't talk about it as much. And I think it's just simply because they haven't seen it. And this is one of those times. I just watched it the other day and I'm like, wow, this is a pretty darn good movie. I don't know why people have not seen it. I don't know. I don't really have specific theories. I mean, I guess if you, this is okay. This is about as best a theory as I can get, give. If you like the Coen brothers, you would see it. But if you liked it and for some reason didn't know it, because I do remember at the time the way it was marketed, I don't think it was like heavily pushed as a Coen brothers film. I think it was just more like heavily pushed as just like a normal mainstream comedy. Because yeah, are they mainstream? Slightly. I think they're kind of quirky. They have their own specific following of fans. And I feel like this movie was marketed as more of just a regular mainstream comedy, which I think Coen Brothers fans don't necessarily consider themselves a part of that audience. And that audience didn't seem to take to the movie. I don't remember it being like a bomb, but it certainly wasn't a hit, and it's certainly not a movie that's considered like a cult hit like a lot of their other films. So, I want you to watch this movie. And because I want you to watch this movie, I am not going to reveal spoilers, which I have to admit I was tempted to because this is not an easy movie to talk about without bringing up spoilers. Just a lot of twists and turns in this movie, which is really, really cool. Like, it's a big part of the appeal of this movie is how many times it kind of like keeps, shifting in all these different ways that's really neat and fun. But I've come up with a way to explain the plot of the movie without giving away pretty much anything. All right, so let's talk about the plot to the 2003 film Intolerable Cruelty. After Marilyn, played by Catherine Zeta-Jones, not only discovers that her wealthy husband has cheated on her, but has video evidence to prove it, she files for divorce, planning to demand a large property settlement. It looks like, with the video evidence of her husband's infidelity, she'll get what she wants until her husband hires the greatest divorce lawyer ever, Miles Macy, played by George Clooney. This man is legendary. He can't lose. He is the Michael Jordan of divorce lawyers. He always finds a way. He does. His name instills fear in the courtrooms. Marilyn does not get what she wants and loses the case. Now, I just want to stop right there. That sounds like a big spoiler, right? No, it's not. Trust me, it's not. You need to get past this part of the plot to move forward. It could have been just about this. It could have been like a courtroom film. Typically, courtroom films are dramas, right? And this could have been like courtroom comedy, which in itself would have been kind of a unique approach to courtroom films, which I'm not specifically attracted to courtroom films, but even this part of the movie is so fun and well done. But if it was just this, I still would have enjoyed it. But it's not just this. This is just like the first half, just to kind of move the plot forward. So she does not win the case. She decides to get revenge on the divorce lawyer, Macy, for ruining her divorce plans. She hatches up one of the most brilliant revenge schemes ever, filled with the craziest, unsuspecting twists and turns. There are levels to her plans, layers to her plans. One of the things that potentially interrupt this plan is after Marilyn re-enters Macy's life, Macy falls in love with her. Now, this movie can keep you guessing not only to what's going to happen next, but also makes you ask yourself, am I watching a rom-com? And as you know, rom-com is short for romantic comedy. Or am I watching an anti-rom-com? Does that make sense to you? Like a film that's almost like a satire on rom-coms, like it's kind of making fun of it. Either way, it is very clever. And if you like the Coen brothers, I don't think it comes to you as any surprise that I would describe this film as very clever. They write very smart screenplays. So the fact that it's clever is my number one reason for liking this movie. A hot second ago, I mentioned the twists and turns of the plot. I can't stress how much I enjoy the twist and turns of this movie. I was so tempted to approach making this episode one of those episodes where I just take you through the plot. And I honestly feel like, because I believe that there's such a strong chance that you may not have seen this movie, that it would really do you a disservice to go into the movie knowing all the twists and turns, and that potentially you might not even want to if you knew all the twists and turns. And if you do choose to watch this movie and you don't know the twists and turns, even if you know that I'm telling you ahead of time that they're coming, I'm convinced you're not going to see them coming. Because I think that's just how smart the Coen brothers are at writing screenplays. Because there are moments during the movie where they keep introducing facts where you as the viewer go, okay, how are they going to get around this? And then if you were the kind of person who might try and work it out in your head of how you think they're going to get around this, the Coen brothers are so clever at screenwriting that when they reveal what they're going to do with this information that they introduce, it's never what I expected. And I'm saying I, not you, because who knows, maybe you're smarter than me. Maybe you'll be like, I called it. I knew it was going to happen that way. I don't think so. I think it's really going to surprise you. And this is something that keeps like unraveling. Like there's so many layers to it. Like there's like, just when you think you've got it figured out, it does something else that changes it again. And so it's like, you never, like just when you think you've got the movie figured out, it does something new, and it never does anything new that irritates you. It never makes you feel like it's in any way cheating. It's never like jumping the shark, for instance. It never like, what? You never do. Like, everything makes sense. Everything is done in such a clever way where you appreciate every choice that's made to change the plot. It is a wild ride. Now, it is a comedy. So often the most important question with any comedy is it funny? Okay, this is kind of a challenging question to answer. One, because obviously comedy is subjective, right? Like what makes me laugh might not make you laugh. But this is the best way that I can describe how funny the movie is. It's not, in my opinion, laugh out loud funny. It's laugh in your head funny. And I think you know what I mean by that. There are comedies that are funny that don't make you laugh. And I know that some people would disagree with me. They're like, nope. If it doesn't make you laugh, that means it's not funny. I disagree. I think there are jokes that exist that are kind of, I don't want to say intellectual, but, you know, they're more cerebral, right? Not even that I consider this like a smarty pants movie. Like, they're just jokes that you watch them and you think, like, while they're happening, you're like, oh, that's such a funny idea. And I'm really enjoying what I'm seeing. I'm very tickled by this on the inside, but it doesn't necessarily make you laugh out loud. It might make you laugh out loud. And, you know, there's a couple of characters in particular that might, you know, inspire that laughter. But for the most part, I don't think it's that kind of comedy. I think that it's a movie that's mostly driven by its twists and turns in the plot. It's terrific performances by the cast because everybody delivers in this movie. And the idea that there's a lot of funny ideas, but they're not necessarily ideas that like aggressively tickle your funny bone. You know, it's not that kind of comedy, you know? Now, I mentioned rom-com. Is this movie a rom-com? I don't know. I feel like people who like rom-coms would say it's not rom-com enough for them. And that they'd go, nope, it does not deliver in what I want out of a rom-com. I don't have an interest in rom-coms, but I don't have a prejudice against rom-coms. I would watch one. It doesn't matter. I wouldn't be like, ugh. I'm not even against the concept of romance, you know? I think that if you can get me to care about the characters, yeah, I can be interested in the story about whether or not they get together. I do kind of approach rom-coms a little bit more carefully in that if it just looks like an average movie, I probably won't watch it. And I have nothing against the idea that those exist. Like, I think that that's great. They should exist. They should be there for people who want that in their, you know, in their entertainment. If that's what makes them happy, then good. That should exist. No one should be denied that. I'm not drawn to it, but I'm also not repelled by it if it's done in a unique way. So if you're willing to consider this movie as a romantic comedy, which I think it is officially, if you twist my arm and force me to make up my mind, I'm going to say I do think it is a romantic comedy, but not one that is going to appeal to your average rom-com fan. I think it's going to appeal to people who, it's a rom-com for people who don't like rom-coms. Seems like such a cop out of an answer, but I stick to it, man. I think it's appropriate. Now, which leads to an interesting idea in that a second ago I mentioned if I care about the characters, which would suggest that I care whether or not they get together or not, it would inspire me to, you know, have an interest in a romantic comedy. The reality is, both of these characters, the George Clooney character and the Catherine Zeta-Jones character, are not good people, but they're great performances by great actors. They're such fun to watch that I enjoy watching them on screen being bad, doing bad things, tricking people, being tricked. It's a wonderful performance. So in that case, I'm very interested in the characters, but I'm not interested in the people as people. Like, as people, I think they're, I don't want to say despicable, but that's not far off. I think they're kind of bad people. And I think that in itself is kind of a unique approach to a romantic comedy. Like, could you care about whether or not two people that you don't like fall in love? Maybe. Because, like, part of me also is like when I care about the people, like, I want them to get together. Like, that's the goal, right? Isn't the end game for them to hook up? Well, in this case, because I don't necessarily find them good people, I don't care about whether or not they hook up. But because I'm enjoying their performances and because it's so well written, I just enjoy just watching this weird journey they go on. So I think that if anything that I just said appeals to you, this could work for you, and especially if you, like me, have an interest in the Coen brothers. Now, if for some reason you don't know who they are, then please don't worry about it. Just forget everything about me mentioning their name and just go on my description of the movie. Like, does my description of the movie make the movie sound appealing to you? If yes, give it a chance. If you like the Coen brothers, I say definitely give it a chance. But I mean, I would think that if you like them, you watch all of their movies. And if you watch all their movies and you like them and you haven't seen this one, it's possibly because you just didn't get around to it and you were always meaning to. So what I'm hoping for is that this podcast episode nudges you towards finally checking it out. Now, originally, this wasn't going to be a Coen Brothers film, which is kind of weird to me, because like most of the Coen Brothers films are movies that they developed. This is one of the rare times where somebody else was going to make a movie and it just didn't work out, and they ended up with the project. Now, I don't know the backstory of how, you know, it changed hands, but I heard that originally it was supposed to be a Jonathan Demme film. And back when Jonathan Demme was going to make the film, the part of Miles Macy was originally, well, I don't know who was going to get it first, but I know two different actors' names were thrown about. One was Hugh Grant and the other was Will Smith. And then when the Coen brothers took over, they put George Clooney in the lead, which makes sense because the Coens had previously worked with George Clooney in Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? Now, like a lot of directors who are auteurs, they tend to work with the same actors and actresses over and over again. And I could go over all the different people that you see over and over again in all the Coen Brothers films. But in this case, we're talking about Mr. Clooney. And I will also remind you that later, and well, as of right now, it's the past, but as of this film, when it had come out, it hadn't been made yet. So later in the year 2008, George worked with the Coens again in Burn After Reading, and then again in 2016 in the film Hail Caesar. Now, between this movie, Burn After Reading, and Hail Caesar, I like this one the most. However, between this movie and Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, I like Oh Brother, Where Art Thou more. But that shouldn't matter. That shouldn't matter. I do like George Clooney. I think he's very charming. I think he is proof that you can be handsome and funny. I think that there's a theory that in order to genuinely be funny, you have to kind of be funny looking. Have you heard this theory? That this idea that, like, you know, it's easier for an audience to laugh at someone if there's something about them visually that's funny. So something that makes them seem like a, I don't want to say loser type, but in the case of handsome people, we're talking about men, so we're going to just focus on that concept, being handsome. If you look like George Clooney, you look like the kind of guy where, you know, the way they're perceived by other people, like, oh, they're so good looking, it looks like everything right would happen for them. So if everything right would happen for them, how could their, you know, seemingly perfect life lead to comic moments? And if they seem cool, then how could they ever be funny? Well, and I don't want to over explain why I think that's a flawed concept, but it only carries weight in that you don't see it happen that often. And I think that George Clooney is a great example of someone who is, I mean, even if you don't think he's handsome, you at least are not, you're at least aware that that's the consensus, that most people think he's handsome, and that, you know, he seems like a classic movie star, and he has a sense of humor about himself, and he has no problem making a fool out of himself. And I think he does a really good job of it, especially in Coen Brothers films. he kind of reminds me of Cary Grant. You know, one of my favorite old movies is Arsenic and Old Lace, which I would never want to see be remade. But if I found out tomorrow that Arsenic and Old Lace was being remade and the Cary Grant part was going to George Clooney, I would be very, very excited. Now, speaking of casts, like a lot of Coen Brothers films, this is a kind of an eccentric or eclectic cast. It also stars Catherine Zeta-Jones, as I mentioned earlier, as well as Cedric the Entertainer, Billy Bob Thornton, Jeffrey Rush, and Edward Herrmann. And you might ask, who is Edward Herrmann? Well, I'll tell you, he's Max, the guy who owns the video store in the original Lost Boys. One thing I really want to point out, because I really appreciate this, all the characters in this movie have unusual names, which I really get tickled by. So I wrote down their names, and I just want to share them with you, because they're just even funny to say. So here we go. So the characters in this movie include Miles Macy, Donovan Donnelly, Rex Rexroth, Howard D. Doyle, Sarah Batista O'Flanagan Sorkin, Marilyn Hamilton, Rexroth Doyle Macy, and Heinz, the Baron Krauss von Espy. Those are some good names. I also want to mention, I really like the opening credits to this movie. It's animated with this kind of cut and paste art style. And it features the song Suspicious Minds by Elvis Presley, which is a really cool song. I'm not like a big Elvis Presley fan, but I do like that song a lot. And I've noticed that among even people who aren't like the biggest Elvis fans, that's one of his more popular songs. And I hear it in movies a lot. Now, I know I've been trying to push you to watch this movie, which leads to, well, how can I see it? And I know I've put my foot in my mouth in the past by giving information in old podcast episodes because they're relevant very briefly. But, what are you going to do? If you happen to listen to this when I first put this out, I will say that it's not currently streaming anywhere, but you can rent it digitally for $4. And I have noticed that you can still get this movie on DVD or Blu-ray for under $20. So it's not the hardest movie to get a hold of, even though it's not streaming. But who knows, if you happen to listen to this episode in the future, it very well might be streaming by now. So there you go. I don't know if it was a hard pitch. Was it a hard pitch? I feel like it wasn't necessarily a hard pitch. I think you've already made up your mind by now whether or not you care. Maybe you don't care. Maybe you just want to listen to me babble, which I do. I'm a babbler. Thank you for listening to me babble. I hope you listen to me babble again, because you know I'm going to. Until then, please take care of yourself and each other. Aloha.